This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm Kip Allen, host for World Lutheran News Digest. We have two stories today. The first story concerns religious persecution of Christians. Persecution is on the rise worldwide as Islamic violence spreads throughout the Middle East and Africa. Nationalist Hinduism in the Indian subcontinent, and the communist government of China. I speak with Todd Daniels, regional manager for the Middle East, for International Christian Concern, about the situation worldwide. The second story concerns the lure of Islam. To a Western Christian, why someone would be attracted to Islam, especially radical Islam, is puzzling. Andy Bates puts that question directly to Dr. Timothy Furnish, an expert on the Islamic world, later in the broadcast.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here's news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. Secretary of State John Kerry assured a Republican lawmaker that the newly sworn-in ambassador-at-large for international religious freedom will have direct access to him, after concerns about the position's junior status in the State Department. Quote, I understand that his role is perhaps not as robust as it could be in reporting directly to you, Representative Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska told Kerry. Stressing the size and importance of the challenge ahead, Fortenberry said, Middle Eastern Christianity is shattered, and someone's going to have to pick up the pieces there. Kerry replied, Rabbi Saperstein is distinguished an advocate as there is, and he has access to me at any time. Just before dawn on Monday, February the 23rd, ISIS fighters entered Assyrian Christian villages. More than 90 men, women, and children were taken from the villages and are believed still being held by ISIS. As many as four churches were destroyed, and more than 3,000 people have fled their homes following the assault on the Christian villages along the Khabur River. Initial reports stated that the men were taken by the fighters to the Abd al-Aziz mountain, while the women and children were left in the village, guarded by ISIS militants. Sources of the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported overhearing ISIS fighters say that they had detained what they called 56 crusaders from Tal Shamaram. Additional reports of abductions pushed the number to between 70 and 100, according to Nori Kino, founder of ADFA, with some reports as high as even 200 people being abducted. Extremists also released a video showing continued destruction of the heritage of lands under their control. It depicted men using sledgehammers to smash ancient Mesopotamian statues and other artifacts in Iraq's northern city of Mosul. The destruction of artifacts in the Mosul Museum is part of a campaign by ISIS extremists who have destroyed a number of shrines, including Muslim holy sites, to eliminate what they view as heresy. They also are believed to have sold ancient artifacts on the black market in order to finance their campaigns in the region. In the video, militants use sledgehammers and drills to smash and destroy several large statues, which are then shown chipped and in pieces. The five-minute video also shows a black-clad man at an archaeological site in Mosul drilling through and destroying a winged bull, an Assyrian protective deity that dates to the 7th century BC. World Lutheran News Digest will return right after these messages.
Cross Defense, the apologetic show for inquiring minds of all ages. Cross Defense airs Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. On air, online, on demand, right here on Worldwide KFUO.
I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Jubilation on Worldwide KFUO. Coming up this Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m., I'm going to be sharing not only great Christ-centered hymns and songs, I'm going to be also providing various scriptures for you all about the subject of a real hope. See, when yours is centered in Jesus totally, then you have a hope with no minus sign attached to it. So join me Sunday for great music and a hope with no minus sign. That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
If you have a question or comment for us at Worldwide KFUO, it's easy to contact us on our website, kfuoam.org. On our homepage, click on Contact Us, where you'll find a map and directions to the station, our telephone numbers, and an online contact form. You can also send an email to our in-studio account, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'd be happy to hear from you today. Thanks for listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Pastor William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship. Jesus said some hard things in John 6, and lots of his disciples turned away and stopped following him. He asked the 12 if they wanted to go too. Peter responded for them all, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Words of eternal life, those are the words your Jesus has for you. Join me for the next broadcast of Thy Strong Word, 11 a.m. Central on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Hehe Weilongasi Lutheran Fihawa.
Today's news is full of stories about how Christians are facing increasing persecution across the globe. The oppression comes from different sources, but the danger is the same. Various groups are helping the victims of such persecution, and one such group is International Christian Concern, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C. Todd Daniels, the ICC's regional manager for the Middle East, talks about the organization.
We've been around about 20 years, and our mission is serving the persecuted church around the world.
Daniels says the ICC's mission is threefold.
We do that through assistance, advocacy, and then awareness of what's going on.
Christian persecution is a worldwide phenomenon. Reflecting the scope, the ICC works in about 30 different countries.
We are operating in about 30 different countries and working both direct assistance with pastors, church leaders, helping to build the church in places where it's difficult.
Not only do they work with church leaders and other organizations, they also bring help to individuals and families who are suffering persecution.
But then we also do a lot of work with the victims of persecution, people like the families of those who were executed in Libya a few weeks ago, or those who have been accused of blasphemy in Pakistan and elsewhere.
Broadly speaking, there are three main sources of persecution of Christians in the world today. They are militant Islam, militant Hinduism, and the communist government of China. Although some of the worst instances of persecution of Christians is taking place in parts of the Middle East controlled by the Islamic State, militant Islam is spreading beyond the reach of the region and indeed beyond the Arab world.
With the Islamic world, it's definitely also reaching out to not just the traditional Middle East or the Near East, where we might think of it, but we're seeing into Africa, kind of creeping down from North Africa, what's happening in Nigeria, just recently in Niger, as well as in East Africa.
Daniel says one of the worst places for Christians is the nation of Pakistan.
Pakistan is one of the central areas where there's a lot of persecution that is definitely caused by Islam, but is because it's outside of the Arabic world. People often overlook that.
Persecution can take different forms. Some persecution takes the form of governmental harassment.
In Pakistan, you have a number of women that are unable to get jobs. They're also in places in Egypt, just on the economic level or education. There's additional restrictions placed on Christians or opportunities that they lose because of that.
Some of the worst persecution doesn't come from hostile governments, but from people who are part of a mob or members of a terrorist group or political movement, such as the Muslim Brotherhood.
And then you have the more overt, violent persecution that I think we can all kind of conceptualize of a pastor who's in prison because of his faith, or someone that's pulled out of their home and beaten by a mob, all the way to what we've seen in Iraq, Syria, and Libya of people that have been executed because they're Christians.
Some of the worst incidents of violence against Christians took place in Egypt in the summer of 2013 as political unrest swept that country.
The wave of persecution that hit Egypt in August of 2013 was probably on probably the largest wave of persecution that country's witnessed in its history, where you had nearly 100 churches that were burned, hundreds of homes, shops, vehicles that were destroyed as well.
That was just one of the most recent examples of oppression against Christians in Egypt, but persecution there is not new. For example, restrictions against building churches have been in place for more than a century.
The restrictions on them, on, like you mentioned, of building churches, there's a law that actually dates back about 100 years, that there's additional criteria for specifically for churches that that would all have to be met, that makes it nearly impossible.
However, the situation in Egypt seems to be improving, especially in the wake of the murder of 20 Egyptian Christians in Libya by ISIS terrorists. Egyptian President Sisi actually reached out to the Coptic community following that tragedy.
There has been in Egypt some really promising steps taken by President Sisi in the last 6 months and since he's come into power.
He also became the first Egyptian president in the entire Egyptian history to attend the Christmas Mass and gave a speech at the Coptic Orthodox Christmas service in Cairo in January of 2015, calling for unity and wishing the Christians a Merry Christmas. But things are still restrictive for Christians in other countries, such as Saudi Arabia. Christian houses of worship are forbidden in that country, although an accommodation has been made for certain Western oil workers.
For Westerners who are there working at oil companies and others, there's kind of an understanding that on the compound owned by a company, you might be able to have a gathering of Christians. So there are kind of informal Bible studies that are allowed to happen.
But even these informal gatherings face severe restrictions.
Any materials that they would use in the Bible study had to be shredded. Afterwards, there could be no remnants of it, no open talk about a church. And then, like you mentioned, of wearing a crucifix or any open or public display of Christianity is also illegal.
Another place where Christians are seeing increasing persecution is India. Although India's government is officially secular with freedom of religion, the overwhelming majority of the population is Hindu. Recently, the Hindu religion and Indian nationalism have become mixed in politics, with adverse results for the nation's Christian minority.
India has been a recent surge in the level of persecution that's been happening there from militant Hindu nationalism that's kind of coalesced in outlawing Christianity in some villages.
Another hot spot of Christian persecution is in the world's most populous country, China. Christianity is rapidly growing in China, a country that is officially atheist, and the Chinese government is grappling with this fact.
Yeah, China has been a really interesting case because they are having to grapple with what do they do with this large Christian population.
One fact of special concern to the government is that there are more professed Christians in China than there are members of the Communist Party.
I think some would even say now the number of Christians now outnumber the Communist Party.
Consequently, there is official persecution, especially on the provincial level.
Different tension points come up in pastors that have been arrested, and the legal system is not treating them. It's struggling even to raise legal claims against them. And then you had a huge rash of church destructions, of churches that had crosses being torn down at the order of provincial governors.
Daniel says his organization believes that the levels of Christian persecution are high and are increasing.
There are reasons to think that it is increasing. Some of the trends that people that are able to track the trends statistically, the number of people that are being persecuted would be increasing at some of the highest levels we've ever seen.
Ironically, persecution is having an unintended consequence, especially in the Islamic world. Daniel says Muslims are converting to Christianity in ever-increasing numbers.
Thousands of Muslims that are coming to Christ. There's everywhere you go, somewhat even as a result of the rise of extremism in Islam, you're seeing a number of people that look at this and are asking these questions of, is that really the faith that I hold?
Christians have faced persecution before and will in the future. We are told in the book of John, chapter 16, verse 2, "Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God." Kip Allen, World Lutheran News Digest.
This is World Lutheran News Digest.
Just what is the lure of Islam? Andy Bates discusses this with Dr. Timothy Furnish.
What women in cultures in where Islam is predominant, how does this religion appeal to them?
Yes, that's very interesting. I mean, I think it's perhaps easy to say, if I do this, Andy, it's probably easier to start out with why it appeals to men and then see...
Sure.
Kind of segue into why it appeals to women.
Okay, let's do that.
Why it appeals to men. I mean, this is one thing that we've been looking at, and you know, with some folks I've been consulting with, also with some folks and some other media outlets that I've been working with. You know, as people probably know, you read the news reports, and all ISIS doesn't seem to have any trouble recruiting, does it? The Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, or the Islamic State of Syria. Or as the president likes to call it, ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Whatever, it's the same group. They don't seem to have any problem recruiting, particularly
right.
Young men, and not just from the Middle East. I mean, we've all seen the news stories, I would think. Folks, young men are coming from France, they're coming from Britain. There was an article a few weeks ago that said there were actually more Muslims from Britain serving as jihadists for ISIS than there were serving in the British Army, which is rather problematic. There's also been, depending on who you listen to, anywhere north of 100 ISIS recruits from the United States. Now, I think a couple of factors probably come into play here. I dare say that if one did a detailed background dossier on these guys, I would be willing to bet that most of them don't have any strong religious belief at all. So, you know, the famous dictum by St. Augustine, you've got that hole inside of you and you want to fill it with something. Well, they're filling it with this. And for people that don't have any strong religious beliefs themselves, Islam can certainly be very appealing. It's very simple. You know, God is one. There's no Trinity. You know, all you have to do is say, La ilaha illa Allah wa Muhammad Rasulullah three times. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger three times, and you're a Muslim. You know, you don't have to learn those long creeds that we have on Sunday. Certainly, you don't have to ever wade through the Athanasian Creed. So it's very simple in many ways. I think it also appeals to a certain mindset, and I don't think this is paranoid to say this. I think it's safe to say that, particularly in the public schools in the West, that Christianity has been getting the short end of the stick for decades. I mean, again, I taught college history. I reviewed certainly high school history textbooks sometimes for publishers. And it was clear that, you know, for instance, you often would get the worst view of Christianity presented. Christianity, the Crusades, you know, slavery, that sort of thing. And other cultures around the world, were particularly the Islamic culture, when you're talking about something like the Crusades, are almost always presented in public education venues. Again, not always, but quite often, as the victims. The West is always the oppressor, the colonial overlord, and, you know, again, I taught college history for 7 years, and it would always amaze me that the kids would come into my class, college, mind you, and had no idea that there was a slave trade that existed in the world other than the transatlantic one. You would have thought that the British in 1859 invented slavery. You know, they didn't know that a quarter of the population of the Roman Empire was slaves, or that there was an extensive Islamic slave trade taking, you know, white Europeans and taking them as slaves from Italy and southern France and places like that that went on for centuries. So part of it, I think, is that Islam can be appealing if you have been raised in an environment where the schools have taught you that Western civilization has been a domineering overlord exploiting the rest of the world for centuries. Then, therefore, when you see a religion that is not of that culture and that it purports to be sort of redressing grievances against the West, then that can seem appealing. even to someone that I think is not initially Muslim. And then part of it, too, I think, is simply that, look, these are 19-year-old guys, and I vaguely remember being 19, but my children are in middle school. I'm starting to see this already. I have two boys. But, you know, 19-year-olds have, I think perhaps I'm not going too far uncharitably to say, have perhaps more testosterone than brain cells. And so young men that would perhaps in another context join the Marine Corps, right,
mm-hmm.
wind up thinking, oh, look, adventure. I can go off to Syria, and especially if they've converted to Islam. And some of the worst of these are the converts. The zeal of the convert is not just something that is, you know, applied to Christians. The zeal of the Muslim convert can also often be quite bloody. And these guys say, look, here's a group that's standing up for a persecuted group and because they're convinced that Muslims are persecuted. And you know, I can go fight. I can literally go fight. It's, you know, instead of Che Guevara, it's now bin Laden or al-Baghdadi or, you know, pick a jihadist leader. So I think all of that goes together and appeals to young men. And even, interestingly enough, and sort of sadly, but the beheadings and such horrible atrocities that they commit, they appeal to a certain small demographic slice, particularly of males, who find that sort of unbridled power something they wouldn't mind being part of. Now, I think that to some measure, I'm just a historian. You'll have to get a psychologist to really unpack that one for you, Andy. But I think that does sort of begin to approach some avenues of how you see how young men are attracted to groups like this or and to Islam in general. And again, all Muslims are not ISIS. I realize that. But there's sort of a continuum there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do women do it? Now, this is a very interesting question. A few years ago, I quit teaching college in 2007. In the last year I taught college, I had two young ladies that showed up in my class. They had taken one of my previous world history classes, and they showed up in a Middle East history class that I had started teaching. Both of them had converted to Islam in the interim. And one of them actually wore all black. Her face was uncovered. Everything else was covered with black. The other woman covered everything but her face, but she was, you know, much more liberal. Her outfit was multicolored, although it covered everything. So, I just wanted to take them aside and say why, but of course I can't do that in a public university system. Personally, I don't know, but it's very interesting. I've done some study recently of I don't know if you've seen some of these articles. I think the New Yorker had a big article a couple of weeks ago, and there was a couple of other in the media about the so-called women of ISIS. And the methodology is much the same. You know, the ISIS throws this stuff out on the internet. They put English language stuff out as well as Arabic stuff. They tweet. They can get a Facebook page to stay up. They do that. And they try to draw these women in. They also draw them in, of course, through mosques, various mosques where the imams are, shall we say, sympathetic to them. And it's not that hard to get talked to, if you are willing to do it, to wind up with a plane ticket to Ankara or Istanbul, and then you wind up on the Syrian border. Boom, you're in, you know, one of these cities. You're in Al-Raqqa or something in Syria. You're wearing all black. You are not allowed to fight, however, but you are allowed to hopefully have as many children as you can for the jihad. I think some of the same factors that are active in why young men would be attracted to Islam in general, and perhaps, let's just leave it at that, Islam in particular apply here. You know, it's simple. You know, look, it would be the ultimate act of rebellion, wouldn't it? If you're raised in, admittedly, as I said, though, a lot of these people coming to this religion because they don't have any deep beliefs. But if you were raised in a Christian family and you really wanted to hack your parents off, I don't know what you could probably do that would do it more than converting to Islam, at least in my household. But I think that's part of what's going on. Some of it's just rebellion. Some of it is these women are simply led astray. They're promised things that, you know, aren't going to materialize or are simply untrue. And I think a lot of it is simple ignorance. I mean, I look at these women and I think, how many of you have actually read Surat An-Nisaa where it says that a man is allowed four wives, plural, Well, it says plural wives, and the four is basically from a hadith that's what Muhammad said. So you're allowed four wives, and it says specifically in the Quran that if they misbehave, you are allowed to beat them. So I wonder how many women have actually read that. And one thing I found with a lot of converts to Islam is that they're really woefully ignorant of Islam. And, of course, they take umbrage at the fact that I'm a non-Muslim, and I will, you know, sort of gently suggest that perhaps they don't know as much as they do. But that often is the case. And, I mean, you've seen this. There was just an article last week, again, about this women of ISIS and this one gal who had gone off gung-ho and converted, and then she found out she was basically under virtual house arrest. And her job was to have young jihadists, as many as possible. And there were going to be other wives besides her, which sort of, I think, would sort of make you not feel very special, one would think. So I think a lot of it is just ignorance. I think it's just sort of misguided zeal to again, fill that hole inside of them with something. And this sounds, even for a woman, it's adventure. I'm going to go to Syria and I'm going to do this. And I mean, ISIS, for instance, again, in these magazines that I've studied, they say, well, come on over. We have empty houses. Well, yes, from all the Yazidis and Christians that you've run out, they've empty houses that you can have. The Islamic State needs you. And I think people just, a lot of it is just, frankly, ignorance. They fall for this.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuoam.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.